present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a sign seen in America on a helmet-mounted motorcycle mirror, read for us by Brian Perkins.
Remember, objects in the mirror are actually behind you.
Thanks to Jay Carlisle of Sunderland for spotting that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Hattie Hayridge. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, what will have happened to the rest of the car industry by the time we get to Phoenix?
Well, a tenner won't buy you very much these days. You can get 2.5 packets of Pokemon cards or a very small down payment on a ticket for a Chelsea home game or an ailing British car company. Because this week, BMW sold Rover to the Phoenix Consortium for £10. And this has been portrayed by a lot of people as BMW just trying to get shot of it, as if there was no real hard negotiation. But that's not true, because as I understand it, Phoenix knocked them down from £11.50. So it was pretty tense. But it's a memorable story, because apparently BMW had taken to referring to Rover as the English patient, which is a historic moment, really, because that's a quite good joke that came out of Germany. It's not something they're known for particularly. So that's the story. Rover saved. Huzzah!
But Ford not. It's interesting, isn't it, that when capitalists start up somewhere, they say that they are creating jobs. Creating in a godlike way. And yet, when they leave again, the jobs have not been destroyed. They've merely been lost somehow.
It wasn't you that put that bit of turf on Churchill's head, was it?
BMW denied that the sum of £10 was merely symbolic, pointing out that it beat their original asking price of €2 million. It says a lot for the current state of the British industry that it took a consortium, one of the country's biggest unions, and the sixth largest bank in North America, to come up with £10 whole. 2 points to Andy. Hattie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Who's looking forward to greeting peace with open arms?
Oh, the IRA, isn't it, in Northern Ireland? If they deliberately lose their weapons somewhere and can't think where they left them, then there'll be peace. And they're going to have three people checking it out, including the ex-Finnish Prime Minister, who likes doing things in a towel, apparently, in a sauna. So if they hide the arms in a sauna, it will be all right.
This man, Cory Nguna, who is a Kenyan, who is, they said, was going to move around Ireland surreptitiously. If you've been to Ireland, with any luck, you'll be the second black man in Ireland. But moving around surreptitiously, I love. I didn't spot him, you know, looking at our guns.
I think they should make the decommissioning fun and leave little riddles around the woods in Donegal, saying little cryptic things like, my first is in Semtex, but not in fertilizer.
Tony Blair was congratulated for going the extra mile towards peace, away from London on polling day. 2 points to you, Hattie. Jeremy, who privately admitted their plans had encountered more than a little turbulence?
This will be air traffic control.
It will.
Her Majesty's Labour Party are selling off air traffic control to WH Smith or somebody, or Alan Sugar, somebody with an expertise in that, because the idea is it's all a bit rigid at the moment. It's like planes got to land here at a certain time, got to avoid bashing into some other plane. Oh, the fuss and the holding patterns. If only the thing could just seamlessly flow together, where people could just, you know, a plane just think, oh, that looks nice. We'll land there. Let's see if we can race that other plane and get down before them. You know, have a bit of fun in the skies with planes cutting each other up and that sort of thing. And so they're going to sell it off. And there's been a very minor rebellion because about 60 Labour MPs went, God, like that, which is Labour MPs showing their independence. But, yeah, they're selling it off. It's going to be broken up into two bits called Wing and Prayer.
think everybody's actually caricaturing the government's position rather badly. Because, I mean, what is going to happen, as I understand it, and I think it will be an improvement, is we're going to have a two-tier air traffic control system. So that the planes are in the public system will be stacking indefinitely for very long periods. And if you feel that it's taking too long, you can opt for a private plane that queue jumps. And the other thing is, I think the private planes get the better airspace at sort of 20,000 feet, and the public planes have to kind of bump along the tops of the trees, and they get found 6 months later just in a field somewhere. I think it's very practical.
The question referred to the rebellion by scores of Labour MPs who voted against the government's plans to privatise air traffic control. As the extent of the rebel vote became known, not only did alarm bells start ringing on the government front benches, but oxygen masks dropped from the ceiling above and the no-smoking sign went on. 2 points. Alan, who's there to ITC or properly escorted?
It's deregulation again. It's more crap on television. I mean, there's going to be a whole week of Channel 5 nudity starring, it says, Keith Chegwin, which I look forward to hugely. Hugely might be the wrong word, but I look forward to it. But they're deregulating adverts and escort agencies. They're going to be programmes set entirely in phone booths with cameramen wading through the Whittle to take pictures of people in asks. And they now, I think, are going to be advertising everything. Doctors and lawyers and strippers or whatever. But escort agencies are going to be able to advertise their services on television.
Are they? Mm. Where did you read this?
I read it in a phone booth. Come up and see me sometime, Greg, it said.
I don't think the ads are going to be allowed on Channel 5, though, on the grounds that you're not allowed to have ads that are indistinguishable from the programming.
Well, they still have rather peculiar ads at 3 a.m. when I'm actually listening to Stennis Stairlift and hernia ads, and the most wonderfully targeted ad of all, which is at 4 a.m. because I don't sleep very well. And it's an example of actually Zen advertising targeting. It said, "Are you insomniac? Come to the London Insomnia Centre." And that's the only people who are going to be listening at 4 a.m. are insomniac. But they also have these party line things with dozens of numbers. You can never get down quickly enough because your eyes are a bit glazed at that time. And they're exactly the same as the escort agencies, but you just ring up and talk to people like Jeremy.
Well, they're kind of platonic prostitutes, these people.
I don't know.
You say, "Phone up and don't think about me in that way."
I don't know. I only ever bring up Stennis Stairlift and see if they'll come around and give me a quote.
Maybe there's a whole platonic red light area where you just go and sit with somebody and they say, "Look, I see you kind of as a brother, really, and I don't want to spoil our friendship." You pay them £10 or something and go home again. It sounds quite comforting, doesn't it?
Independent Television Commission has announced plans to soften rules on advertising to allow ads for private detectives, hypnotists and even escort agencies, promoting not so much a backlash as a Miss Whiplash. And the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two with an item seen in the Berwick Advertiser.
A naked man was seen near Berwick railway station on Monday. Berwick police had received unconfirmed reports of as many as 12 naked men at the station. It's thought they were members of a coach party.
Thanks to Betsy Cleaworth. Andy, who bowed to Piers' pressure and took his share of the blame?
This is the story of Piers Morgan.
Yes.
Who is the editor of The Mirror, who had this wizard wheeze along with his city columnists that basically you buy some shares, then you write an article in your newspaper saying what a good investment they are, then the price rockets up and then you sell them at a huge profit. And Piers Morgan has been viciously slapped across the wrists. He has been found guilty of, I think the wording is, conduct that falls short of the standards expected of journalists. I fell off my chair. I fell off my chair when I read that. And he's expressed deep regret because you're right, I've disappointed myself. I am disappointed in myself. I've let myself down, everybody. And there was they had to print the whole of the ruling in the Mirror, but I noticed they printed it in very, very small print so that only if you had the sort of Hubble telescope or something could you possibly read it. But he's still in his job, and Piers Morgan, that fine newspaper.
The PCC hasn't given such a harsh ruling against any journalist since 1995, when the News of the World was condemned for printing vulgarly intrusive pictures of Princess Diana's sister-in-law. That ruling was clearly a lesson to the paper's then-editor, Mr. Piers Morgan. 2 points to Andy. Hattie, why should mobiles carry a government health warning?
Oh, this is children, apparently. I was surprised to know that a quarter of the sales of mobiles are for children. And because they've got thinner skulls, even though we think they're thick, they've got thinner skulls, and the radiation goes right through and warms their head up, which is quite good because they don't wear school caps anymore. So, and there's going to be an age limit. Well, they're thinking of putting an age limit on how old children should be before they have a mobile, and so they're not ringing up going, "Hello, I'm on the potty trainer."
I thought you were supposed to dangle a mobile above the baby's
yes,
cot to stimulate
right.
it. They don't know anything, though, do they? They say, well, what have your tests proven? They say, not much. They say, well, what, should we be worried? Well, no, just mildly concerned. Well, how much should they use? Well, use your common sense. You know. When there's blood pouring out of the child's ears, they're using the aerial wrong.
They're going to put warnings on the phones, aren't they? I think, you know, this phone can damage your health, especially if it goes off in the theatre. You might get lynched.
Having a thin skull is of no consequence, because there's a hole in your skull for your ear stuff, isn't there?
You think the radiation could go straight through
Surely. Yeah. And then there's a hole where your mouth is.
Yeah.
Well,
It never worked out for you at medical school, generally.
None of that was ever proven.
What I love was, like all scientific stories, that it was backed up by research involving rats. And I couldn't work out how you could test mobile phones on rats. I had this horrible image of rats saying, "I'm in the maze!" But they did, apparently. They tested that radiation, and it caused brain disturbance.
Research at Portendown found that mobile phone radiation could change signals in rats' brain cells, causing them to tell the wife they're working late when they're actually shacked up with the secretary in a motel.
Because Alan doesn't approve of mobiles at all, because Alan thinks if you speak loudly and clearly, people should be able to hear you.
It's only abroad,
Jim.
Jeremy, listen to this. From Anne Widdicombe Sings the Cole Porter Songbook. Jeremy, who needs to have a new look at his disco etiquette book?
Was this the dirty old perv who groped the woman? All right, well, there was a dirty old perv, and all he did was grope a woman and got accused of groping. These days, you can't grope anybody without being accused of groping. I love these. The Daily Mail went mad about this. Surely, the political correctness has gone too far. You know, and you get these wonderful letters that say things like, "The other day a woman in the supermarket called me love, and yet when I expose myself in the park, I'm the one accused of sexism." apparently this man is all political correctness gone mad. He got drunk at a party and started assaulting women and got sacked for it under the "don't grope women at discos" employment clause of his contract. Fair play to them. Grope your own bottom, that's what I say.
Have you ever been groped at a disco, have
you? No. I thought it was a bit unfair, really, because he was working for New Look retail chain. I think if he'd have gone to What She Wants, he might have had a bit better luck.
But there's a puzzling element to the story, though, which is that, as I understand it, he got £600,000 worth of compensation. That's £300,000 a grope, isn't it? Pretty good going. Jem's eyes lit up there. Has he? Yes.
But you have to grope somebody to get that compensation.
You have to offend some women. Actually, Jem, you should be doing really well by now.
What?
No, you have to... Yes, you have to offend some women and then you get £600,000. I think that's to avoid a lengthy industrial tribunal as to whether it's fair or not.
Come over here, Attie. Pretty little thing, aren't you?
No, only,
I could make your life very comfortable, my dear. I might be repulsive, but I'm kindly.
He claims, the gentleman in question claims that all he did was tell a woman that she had a nice arse.
But he had assessed that in his own way before.
I think he'd surveyed it, yes.
It's sort of obsessive attention. I've known you not a long time, and there are enormously complex stories in the newspapers that you never address. You know every bloody line of this. In fact, what he said was nice bum, not nice arse.
I read the classier papers.
£200,000
if he'd
said ask.
Yeah.
What a sweet talking devil he is.
Jim Hodkinson, the chief executive of the fashion retailer New Look, was first charged by the board with dereliction of duty and gross misconduct, though these charges were later reduced in an everything must go discount bonanza sale. He said in court that the charges levelled against him were 90% pure fabrication and 10% acrylic. And the scores at the end of round two are thrillingly everybody level on 8 points. And we start round three with an item spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
Faded writing hidden in the roof of a 90-year-old Oriental shrine baffles staff at a country park. The black brush strokes on the building and Tutton Park's Japanese garden were assumed to be poetry or a prayer. So when a top Japanese horticulturist arrived to advise on restoration work, head gardener Sam Yude asked if he could translate the strokes. The horticulturist revealed they contained the message, slide tab A into slot B.
Thanks to Linda Kyle of Burnham for that. Hattie, listen to this music.
This is a modern world. This is a modern world.
Hattie, who might not know much about art, but knows what one likes.
Oh, the Queen's opened the new Tate Gallery. Last time she went there, it was an old boiler room or something. But now she's gone and opened it as a thing. She seems to spend more of the time looking out the window. And I saw it on the news on the telly. I know it wasn't in the paper, that. But, yeah, she was like, they kind of pushed her past the Lucian Freud nudes and went, oh, lovely view of St. Paul's. And it went, oh. I don't know if that's right.
It had twin domes. Sorry.
Yes. Apparently, there's a whole room that's just looks like it's been left by the builders, but that is actually an exhibit. Outside and the other half of the Millennium Bridge is the bit that's still been left by the builders. So it's very hard to distinguish.
What is it with her? She can't wait to open things, can she? The bridge is not finished. And all the bills are going, oh, what's she doing here? She wants to open. It's not ready, is it? Oh. We'll get some bunting and stuff for her, you know. Somebody knock up a plaque with a breeze block and a chisel. Come on. She's like a bullet a gate. She can't wait. I want to open something today. People have to shut down branches of Iceland so she can reopen them again. 6 o'clock in the morning.
Probably a lot more fun for her going round a gallery of modern art, though, because when she goes round a traditional art gallery, she presumably goes round going, oh, I've got one of those. Oh, look, there's Grandad. My Queen impression was no better than Jeremy's. Sorry, Mum.
You ought to feel sorry for her, though, because her whole life has been ruined by Tony Blair, because he just tells her what to do the whole time, because he's so much posher than her. She's hoovering all morning when he comes to the palace. Oh, blimey, the kids will be taken into care.
Andy, who believes the NHS has a room service for improvement?
Oh, this is, this is a NHS story. Is it about putting bed blockers into... Don't look at me like that.
Know.
A he bed blocker
know.
Is a...
the first idea. It's make
him,
eating.
Make him go home. He doesn't know.
If you ever get anything... You get a menu in a National Health Hospital if you ever get into it. And you can order foie gras and Chateau Lafitte. You can get everything except treatment. You can hobble in on their duff hips and be able to have things, not beans on toast. It's a gourmet service.
It's one of Milburn's great initiatives.
But I think what we should talk about is the more important issue of bed blockers.
What are bed
blockers? Or even beds.
Bed blockers are patients who are deliberately not getting well fast enough. And they are a big problem in the NHS. They are elderly people who are perfectly well, other than the fact they can't stand up and they've got no one at home to look after them. But anyway, there was. I thought I read something about sending them out to...
No, it's not it. It's room service. They're going to replace hospital food with hotel-style food. Hotel food is hospital food with a little bit of garnish, basically. But I think the whole point of being in hospital is the regimentation, because it's lovely being in hospital. I was in hospital a few years ago. It's the happiest days of my life. It's marvellous. Because you get big slippers, because you have to wear slippers, and big gym jams and things you don't normally wear. Big dressing gown, which make you slouch, because it's very, very heavy and cumbersome, and you sort of drag yourself off to the lavvy, backwards and forwards, and then they bring tea in the afternoon, and you're perfectly able to get up and, you know, because you're only visiting somebody, you know. The point is, you just become institutionalised in hospital, and they come round with the tea, and you go, oh, thank you, nurse, oh, everyone's been very kind.
2 points to Alan and Jeremy, but 1 point to Andy for the story about bed blockers, which is extremely interesting.
It's going to get cut anyway, so we get all those letters about them being bewildered by the scoring.
There are people who are actually sitting like the editors of Wisdom, sitting and scoring the news quiz. Outrageous. There's a betting syndicate in Malaysia that's making a fortune. Alan, why will the meter reader of the future be out of this world?
This is the University of Surrey Space Centre. You may ask what the University of Surrey is that has got a space centre. They don't do very much. They sort of do sort of clockwork rockets and things. And the bloke there who has come up with a thing that'll put gas meter readers out of business. It's a microsatellite and it can read 500 metres at a single shifty. It whizzes past overhead, just like Jesse Matthews, and looks down on the rest of us and reads our meters. And all those poor sods who come round to my house in the morning for a cup of tea and poke around in my... in the cupboard under my stairs, is what I mean. We'll not be coming anymore. Which is just as well, because what usually happens is you come back, you find a card on the mat saying you were out, you know this. But anyway, this won't happen any longer because more jobs are going. All these men are going to be chucked out because this... tiny Surrey satellites are going to be whizzing about reading our meters.
They're just going to be in the house, or they're going to be in the sky?
No, they're in the sky. They're about 4 miles above the house. They're a little bit of sky. And then they read your meter.
Well, how do they get in your house, then? Or something?
they know the wife. You're very innocent, aren't you? Knocks on the door and says, I've come to read your meter, and it's a little tiny silver thing.
That's a terribly frightening story, that a little thing spinning in the sky can actually read something under your stairs. Think of the implications of that. Could be watching us now.
You'd be bored, though, wouldn't it? That's all. It's going to get frustrated just reading gas meters all the time. It'll be reading your magazines, I shouldn't wonder.
But I can remember when the journey into space was, you know, a wonderful adventure for mankind. You know, I didn't think we were going up there just so we could read people's meters.
Boldly go where no meter reader has gone before.
In future, we're told it will be possible to read your gas and electricity meters from outer space, thanks to a series of British-designed microsatellites to be launched next year. The satellites will orbit the Earth every 100 minutes, yet can still be guaranteed to turn up 8 hours later than they promised. 2 points for that. Hattie, who was at pains to change the way we think of roaches?
Oh, apparently, cockroaches and slugs and snails and all those things we try and stamp on and put in the microwave to try and get rid of have feelings. And when they tested electric shocks on slugs, they had the same kind of reaction as chimps do, which is comforting to know that's the kind of tests they're doing. Although I've never seen slugs having a tea party.
It was this wonderful exercise in cognition, which I know will please Jeremy and Andy, because I make jokes about it all the time. They discovered that the sheep can differentiate between men, and not only in Wales. And they'd never known this before, and they found the sheep could tell men in different suits were different men.
That's very useful in the police lineup, I imagine.
It's strange how we hate slugs, but we rather like snails. When you see a slug, you get the salt, well, go squelch. You see a snail, you pick it up and put it on the wall. It must be due to the fact they have houses. They are like us. We're walking around in a bungalow, they crawl inside. We think we have an affinity with this thing. The slug is, not. It's just like a large mobile bogey. And we don't like them. But it's exactly the same animals. Just one of them's got a mortgage and the other one hasn't.
But a snail is one with a mobile home.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's the kid's joke, isn't it? What did the slug say to the snail? Big issue, sir.
I'm still confused. How do they know that the cockroaches were experiencing pain? The cockroach wasn't given a form to fill out, was it? How? It's just that it runs away, I think, isn't it? They discovered that if you try and whack a cockroach with a newspaper, it will run away. I don't know.
What's unsettling is it's the only animal, I gather, that will survive a nuclear explosion. That the only thing that will be left after the final thermonuclear blast are these little animals.
Going, ouch.
Yes, it will hurt.
Oh, that hurt, that blast.
A study by Dr. Chris Sherwin of the University of Bristol found that cockroaches, slugs and even flies feel pain. Dr. Sherwin's tests also found that slugs behave very similarly to dogs, and BBC Two has confirmed that its revised autumn schedules include a brand new series, One Man and His Slug. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, thank you to the Reverend Ian and Mrs. Gertrude Robbins, who sent in this advertisement. Polisect, ready-to-use insecticide, kills a range of pests. Children and pets need not be excluded.
Alan.
Well, I spotted this in Monday's Times, Simon. There's a Leeds Sunday League soccer team, St Joseph's, which lost every game of the season, suffered a final humiliation last Saturday when they were beaten 5-4 by their supporters.
Now let's look at the final scores. Andy and Hattie have 15 points, but Alan and Jeremy, this week's winners, with 18. Before we leave you, here's an item spotted in The Independent.
I'm inconsolable. I was a very good friend of Jordan. He was probably the greatest basketball player this country has ever seen, said Mariah Carey on being told of the death of King Hussein of Jordan.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Hattie Hayridge. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.